band's latest release is basically a continuation of Heliocentric. Can you tell us a little bit more for the people that are catching up what these two conceptual releases are about and, you know, the ideas and concepts behind them?
Sure thing. It's the second part of the critique of Christianity that we started with Heliocentric pretty much, and we're going for a slightly different approach this time, but it's all based around the same kind of religious questions. Heliocentric was approaching the subject from a pretty much from a historical, chronological point of view. Like, we started with original text from the Bible, the song Firmament, then moved on to the Copernican turn, some of the discoveries that Copernicus and Galilei made, that the Earth is not the center of the universe, and the effects that had on people's beliefs. And the album concludes with Richard Dawkins and Charles Darwin and his book The Origin of Species. And anthropocentric is a bit more of a free approach, still circling around the same kind of questions. But at the base of the album is a chapter in the novel The Karamazov Brothers by Dostoevsky called The Grand Inquisitor, which is basically a conversation between an atheist and a monk about the theodicy problem and various religious topics. And lots of quotes from this chapter in this book are being used in the lyrics, and yeah, it's kind of recurring theme throughout the album.
And what prompted you guys to want to make an album about this and in such like a monumental way that you have a Heliocentric that's more, you know, less heavier and straightforward as this one, and now this one, it kind of changes perspectives?
Sorry, I didn't get the first part of your question.
Well, that what prompted you?
Connection was cutting out.
Yeah. What prompted you guys to write about this and make this release in such a way that it was shaped in two different albums with two changing styles? Yeah.
Well, musically, it was clear from the beginning that we were going to do a double album, which we had done before pretty much with Procamrian, but Procamrian was released together, and this time we didn't want to over-challenge people, so we decided to split it up to two different albums. The reason for that, from a musical point of view, was that I had written the Heliocentric material in a fairly short time frame in the summer of 2008. At the same time, Jonah, our other guitarist, had also written songs that were also cool and sounded like the ocean to me, but didn't really fit with the rest of the material so much. So it was clear from the beginning that we were going to split it up. And the concepts behind are so, it's such a large thematic realm that it was kind of calling for like, you know, at least two albums to tackle that, because there's so much to be said about all that, so that was fitting from this point as well. And we decided to split it up and not release it at the same time this time around, because we just didn't want to over-challenge people. With Procambrian, we unleashed about 100 minutes of music all at once and found out that lots of people just didn't, you know, the attention span of most people these days and age is pretty short, so, you know, some people didn't even really listen to everything, and I think it's a wiser choice to, you know, have some time in between the two albums that people can properly digest it and, and really get into the materia.
And how hard is it to compose everything for you guys, since you've been doing it for a while? It's getting easier with time. What's your opinion on that?
I never suffer from a shortage of ideas or, you know, like creative own problem. I'm not writing material for most of the year. I can't write when I'm on tour, for example. But as soon as I have some time, and, you know, I'm usually in a place quite far away from home, I just have an abundance of ideas, and that it's happening pretty quickly. So it's never a problem that we have to, you know, really wreck our brains to come up with ideas. There's usually more ideas than we can, you know, put on the album. So that's not really a problem.
And do you think that the whole composing aspect is getting easier now that you have more experience and you know exactly what you want and how to get it in the studio?
For sure. I mean, you learn by doing, basically. And when I first started writing classical arrangements, I didn't really have a clue of the octave range of a cello, for example. I ended up writing stuff that, you know, the classical players just couldn't play. But by the time you kind of get an idea of what you're doing, and I'm completely self-taught. I haven't studied music or anything like that. So I kind of know what I'm doing now mostly, but sometimes it, you know, even takes some time to really think about what it is that I'm doing there. But it's a lot more efficient now than a couple of years ago. Like, I really know how to use my tools. I really know what to do in terms of, like, arrangements. And I have a lot more experience with how to arrange, like, 4 or 5 classical instruments in a way that makes sense and in a way that the players are actually going to be happy to play it and that it works out in the end. So that's something you just pick up along the process. We've spent lots of time doing that. And now we're at a point where we're pretty efficient, I think, in terms of composing and arranging.
And having such a rich sound, like you said, you guys use all kinds of different instruments, but, I mean, this is not really, you know, you guys don't do it on the live setting. Is there any, like, you know, point where you're, like, trying to figure out the line between how much you want to have sampled or not even sampled live versus the album?
We're permanently discussing that, actually. Of course, we want to be able to reproduce the album's live, and that is difficult when you have lots of instruments with you that you can't have with you live. We have played certain shows where we had an extended lineup on stage with 12, 13 musicians, and we just filmed our record release party for Heliocentric this March with 12 people on stage, I think. There was a contrabass player, and a viola player, a violin player, and a cello player, and a trombone player, and bunch of people. So we do that occasionally, but of course we can't bring all of them on tour with us. So we have to figure out a different way there. The way we're doing it is we're letting the tracks come from the sampler as backing tracks, basically, which works. People get the studio sound. It's just, of course, always cooler if it's played live. So with this last album, Anthropocentric, one of the reasons why we have not used so many of the large orchestrations was that we really wanted to do an album that we were able to replicate live. Without having so much come from the sampler. It's an album where the core of the band comes to shine, you know, the drums, bass, guitars, and vocals, basically, and only the last song has a couple of strings. And that's not a general direction for us. We are going to work with big instrumentations again, but for this album, we really wanted to make a stripped-down album that is basically just a solid rock album, not so much this huge, epic, orchestral piece of music that is difficult to reproduce live. You got to keep it interesting for yourselves and for your fans. We're trying to do something different all the time.
So you guys will never consider being a 25-piece band?
Not really. That won't work unless we sell as many records as Metallica do, which is still going to take a while, maybe.
And you mentioned touring, and we all pretty much know that you guys had some terrible tour experience while touring to support it. I mean, you're in your last tour. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Are you alluding to the robbery?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it just happened like a week ago. We're on that tour, actually, supporting the Dillinger Escape Plan over Europe. And you've probably heard the news. We were in Spain driving from Bilbao to Madrid, and 30 kilometers before, we got pulled over by a black BMW car. And they showed us police IDs and wanted to see the papers on the car and asked if we had any money to declare. And as soon as I showed them the wallet, they just reached through the open window and the guy ran away towards the BMW, which was parked in front of us, you know, where his colleague was waiting with a running engine, and they took off. And that may seem a bit naive from us to just show them the money, but it's absolutely common practice in Europe that you have civil cops, you know, who will only show you police badges and don't have, like, blue, you know, like, flashing lights on the cars or whatever. And it's also normal that you have to declare money when you cross borders. We've been in other, like, random police checks where this has been the case, so we weren't really questioning whether they were actually real cops or not, and it happened within a matter of 2 or 3 minutes, so it was just so quick that we were just baffled, and we didn't really know what was happening. And yeah, we tried to follow them, but, you know, they had a fast car, we had a van and trailer, it was pointless, and unfortunately, we didn't have any weapons on us either, so there was really nothing we could do, pretty much. It was fucked. We lost $6,000, which is pretty much the whole income of fees we've had from this whole tour, 33 shows. And it's quite a significant loss. Yeah, we're pretty awfully struck by it, but luckily this donation thing that we've started seems to work out pretty well, and we seem to have a lot of devoted fans that you know, donate money. And we just started the pre-order for a new album, also the vinyl versions, through my own label, Pelagic Records, and lots of people are ordering right now. And I'd say 80 to 90% of the people who order it have donated $5, and that's great. Everything helps right now, and we're very thankful for that.
And what would you consider would be the lesson learned from this terrible experience and highly unlucky?
There's numbers of lessons to be learned from that. The first thing that came up was like, we can do that too. You know, just kind of fucking steal a license plate and pull over some random tourist cars and get the fucking money back. maybe that'll happen anytime soon. Other than that, I don't really know, man. Like, of course, we're going to be more wary in the future when, you know, cops pull us over. But like I said, we have been pulled over by civil cops in Germany and in France many times, and we've never had any such experience before. So we weren't even thinking that something like that could happen. So now we know, and of course, we're going to be more alert, you know. And of course, when they ask for money, we're not gonna say we carry money on us anymore. That's just retarded. But yeah, but you do have to, when you cross borders in Europe, you do have to declare amounts more than like €5,000 or something like that, you know. For customs reasons, you always have to do that. So it's not something they just came up with out of the blue, you know. It's something that cops actually do. So they were really professional. Like, they really knew what they were asking for, and
it looked legit.
Shit happened. They did, yeah. Shit happens, and we're already over it, like, not financially, but mentally, you know.
Yeah.
We're going to carry on with this tour, and hopefully get some income from these donations and some other sources, and maybe, yeah, we're just going to steal a car and do the same thing ourselves one day.
Oh, gave you guys a new business idea.
Yeah, totally. Gotta take the positive things out of everything.
And you guys, I mean, you promoting the album, how do you see the reaction's been for this leg of the tour that you've been doing?
The tour's been really, really awesome. Like, we've been going down really well every night. We're playing first, which is always a difficult position because the crowd isn't really ready, you know. And sometimes we had to play really shortly after doors. But we're usually playing to a pretty packed house. Lots of the UK shows here are sold out. And it's been awesome. We've been going down really well. We're getting along great with the Dillinger's Tape Land. They're just fucking awesome guys. Really, really cool band. And, of course, one of the most influential bands in heavy music, at least for me personally. And it's a great honor to play with them and to see them live every night for 33 nights in a row. That's just the best thing. It's probably the best tour we've done so far in every regard. We're all... The band is really, you know, consolidated in a way. Like, these people that I've been playing with for the last couple of years, for the last 2.5 years actually, they're really, really into it. We're all in the same boat. We all want the same thing, and we're doing it, and that's just great.
And you also have an upcoming tour with Anathema. Are you guys concerned that the music styles might not mesh pretty well?
Yeah, but that's interesting. I mean, of course I'm worried. Like, I have no idea how we're going to go down on that tour. We're going to be the heavy band. On this tour, we're the pussy band, you know? But on the Anathema tour, we're going to be the heavy band. And I don't know how their fans are going to, you know, deal with that. We're going to adapt our set slightly. I mean, we're a band that covers a pretty large dynamic range of, like, musical styles. And of course we adapt our set lists a little bit to the respective tour that we're on and the, you know, the environment that we're playing in. So with Dillinger Escape Plan, we're playing some of the more heavy songs, and with Anathema we're going to be playing some of the more epic orchestral songs of Precambrian and Heliocentric. And I think it's going to work well. Like, I haven't met the guys yet. I don't know what their fans are. I do like their last album. I think it's pretty cool. And we do have some common ground, you know. We use strings too, and I think it's gonna work out well. I'm really looking forward to these dates, but it's an experiment for sure. We'll see how it goes.
And do you guys have any plans of coming over for promoting the albums in North America?
Yes, absolutely. It's gonna happen between April 15th and May 15th next year. We're gonna be supporting another pretty big band over there, but I can't tell you yet who it's going to be because it's not officially announced. But it's going to happen. We'll be there from mid-May to mid-April to mid-May.
And, I mean, I know it's early, but have you guys getting started thinking of where you want to move from now, what concepts you want to tackle with the next release?
Not at all. I really try to live in the present tense rather than the future or the past, and I have to think from one project to the next. Right now, the project on my agenda is finishing this tour and doing Anathema, and then I have a bunch of stuff to do in Berlin. I also have a side project called Earthship. We're releasing our debut album on my own label this November, and we're going to be touring too, and I'm going to focus a little bit on that when I get back in December and January. There's nothing scheduled for The Ocean. And then starting from February, March on, we're going to be touring Europe again, a headlining tour, and possibly Australia later, and then the U.S. So that's the next things coming up, and we're not even going to start thinking about recording a new album until like mid of next year earliest, probably even later.
And how do you feel that the band has been, you know, evolving through the years? What are your opinions? Are you, are you kind of, you know, where you thought you were going to be a couple of years ago, or has this taken you by surprise at all? How do you feel that things
hard to say. Hard to say. You always have expectations, and some of them are being fulfilled. Some of them you feel let down. You know, you just got to have some patience, but the fact that we're touring with bands like Opus and Dillinger's Capelin is a huge success, and that's something I've always wanted to do, tour with my favorite band, so that's great. We've been to the U.S. already once. We're going back there. That's another thing that I've always wanted to do. Australia is coming up, so I'm pretty happy with where we are. I think a lot of people are still finding out about us now, and that's great. You know, we've been playing some pretty underground tours for the first years of this band's existence, and we've only started playing bigger tours in the last 3 or 4 years, and every night now I meet someone who tells me he found out about us through Heliocentric, and that's cool. We're still gaining lots of fans. It's growing. In an age where most record labels tend to sell less records of most of their popular bands, we're selling more with every release. You know, it's still not huge, but it's just growing and getting somewhere, and there's still a lot of things on my wish list to do, but, you know, we're going to be doing this for much more time, I hope, so you just have to be a little bit patient and see what happens.
And what would your recommendation be for bands that, you know, like we were saying, well, this music industry now, it's not as good as before, now there's more bands coming out every day due to, like, MySpace and pages like that. What would you say to somebody that has what it takes, but they're kind of getting discouraged by all this, you know, competition and media?
Honestly, it's difficult for me to answer that question, because when we started out, things were different than now, you know. Even in the last, like, 8 or 9 years, so many things have changed in terms of the importance of record labels and on the other hand, things like MySpace and internet promotion, that it was a completely different situation when we started out than it is now. You don't depend on record labels these days anymore. Everyone can do a decent quality home recording, you know, with the technology that is out there, and it's affordable too. And you can promote and spread the word about your band through the internet with very low marketing budget. So that's really cool. That enables people to go for a more grassroots approach to promoting your own band, which is awesome. You don't depend on huge budgets anymore and on the industry. On the other hand, there's such an overflow and such a vast abundance of music out there that it's just really hard to come through. And I guess in the end, it's a matter of, you know, weeding out the weed. Like, there's too many bands out there, and it's difficult to fight your way through that forest, I think, if you haven't already done that in a way. So that's something everyone has to figure out for themselves. But the most important thing for any band starting out is playing shows, touring, and convincing people in the live environment, and that's I guess the same starting point for everyone. And that wasn't even different 10 years ago. That's still the same.
And do you still, I mean, with all those bands and everything, are you still aware of kind of finding new bands, or you don't like to, you know, listen to other music except stuff that you liked from before?
Oh yeah, I'm always curious, and that's one of the cool things about doing a van tour like we're doing right now, as opposed to doing a bus tour, is that you end up staying with people. and that means that you're, you know, you always get to stay in a different place, meet different people who can play your music, of course, and you get to check out their record collection, and it's much more interesting than a bus tour, where you're like, you know, sometimes you wake up in the morning and you don't even know what city you're in. You don't know if you're in Stockholm or in Madrid or something like that. So that's one of the cool things, that you always get to hang out with people. And of course, I'm curious about music. I always try to keep my ears open. At the same time, I'm not listening to so much music in the van because we have a pretty shit stereo. And usually when people put on music, I just get annoyed, put on my headphones. And well, but yeah, you're always discovering things. And just last night, we were listening to this amazing, amazing band called Virus from Norway, I think. And I had heard about them before, but wasn't really familiar with their material. But last night at 4 in the morning, when we got to this guy's place, staying somewhere near Manchester right now, he was playing that record, and I was blown away. I was like, fuck, man, I have to get this off of you right now. This is fucking awesome. So I'm definitely just discovering new things every day.
And, I mean, are there, like, any closing remarks that you want to say to the people in North America that are going to be anxious for the new album to come out?
Yeah, it's going to be out mid-November. I think in the U.S. the release date has been kept. In Europe it's been postponed due to problems with the, as usual, very extensive packaging and artwork. But the album's coming out. Check it out. If you like heliocentric, you're going to like this one. If you did not like heliocentric, you're also going to like this one. It is quite different. It's a bit heavier, a bit less of the big orchestrations, but I think it's the most representative album of this band in 2010, where we are right now. Every single band member has been much more integrated and involved with the whole writing and recording process than ever before, and I think you can hear that on the album. It's very organic sounding, and sound-wise, it's also better than the previous album, I think. And definitely come check us out live. You get something different than on the album. We have, you know, like all these visuals and light, custom light show that is quite important. That's, of course, all stuff that you don't get from listening to the record. So if you ever have a chance, check us out between April 15th and May 15th. We'll be in the U.S.